Clay, Star Trek Discovery is starting to tie into the Rotten Horror Picture Show. And we have an appearance of David Cronenberg, who you recently did on The Fly, maybe 4 or 5 Rotten Horror Picture Shows ago. But here he is, in his glasses, adjusting his glasses, talking to Philippa Georgiou about the Mirror Universe, talking about his love of Terrans, his love of all things Star Trek. Were you excited? I wouldn't have recognized him unless I had read about it, so I wouldn't have known. But I did read about it going in, and it was obviously him at that point. But did you recognize him, or did you know it was him without reading about him?
I saw him in the trailer last week, and I wasn't 100% sure it was him because he's sort of a, you know, he's not exactly special looking, I guess you could say.
He's not super distinct. He's distinct without being identifiably distinct, I guess would be the way to describe him.
Yeah, and the giveaway is the glasses. He's gone through a fairly interesting style evolution, because if you look at him back in the 80s, he had this kind of shaggy hair and these big wire rim huge glasses that really made him look like a nerd. And then I feel like in the 90s, his kids told him that he needed to get cool looking or something. So he got a buzz cut, like shorter hair, like a better done hair, and started wearing contacts. So he didn't have the big glasses anymore. But now as he's getting older, he clearly has gone back to the identifiable trademark giant glasses, which I appreciate.
Do you think he signed on to Discovery because Discovery itself is a horror show?
Well, I can only hope that it's just a, what's the word, foreshadowing of the body horror we should be expecting later on in the season.
Right, yeah. We'll talk more about Mr. Cronenberg, whose character I don't know. Does he have a name in this?
It's Kovic. Like,
Kovic or something. All right, so let's take a break. We'll take a, we'll play a clip from the episode, which is called Die Trying, and then we'll come back and we'll break it down.
After a journey of 930 years and a return to Earth that we could not have anticipated, we are finally on the verge of reaching our destination, Federation and Starfleet headquarters. Separate entities that must now abide together. A sign of this new time, I suppose. I can only hope that they are as eager for us to arrive as we are to be home.
Die Trying is the 5th episode of the 3rd season of Star Trek Discovery. Came out on November 12th, 2020. Did I say that right? It's the 5th episode of the 3rd season. Teleplay goes to Sean Cochran. Story credit goes to James Doff and Sean Cochran. Directed by Maha Vervillo, I believe is how you pronounce it. In universe date is...
I think it's actually Maya. And I only know that because a girl I went to college with had a friend whose name was spelled M-A-J-A and it was pronounced Maya. I could be 100% wrong.
What did I say? Maha?
Maha.
Okay. Maya Vervillo. I was actually questioning the second part because it looks like it's missing a vowel that I can't figure out. But anyway, in universe date is 802-801, which is 3189. In this episode, after reuniting with what remains of Starfleet and the Federation, the USS Discovery and its crew must prove that a 930-year-old crew and starship are exactly what this new future needs. I thought this was an interesting episode, if anything. This one, I thought it was both the best Discovery episode this season and maybe the best Discovery episode in a while, while also sort of accidentally being good and accidentally being really self-contradictory in a lot of ways and like sort of just pinnacle peak Discovery at its best. But what did you think about this one? I liked this one, I think. I liked the first half. I wasn't crazy about the second half, but I did like the first half quite a bit. And if anything, I just thought it was interesting in a way that this held my attention in a way that the previous episodes this season have not, where I found myself sort of like fading away or getting distracted by other things. This one actually held my attention, and there's a couple reasons for why that is. But what are your general thoughts about it?
I thought this was the best one of the season so far. It almost felt like they needed to get all of the tying up loose ends from the last season and getting everybody back together before they could really get into the story. Like, remember in Picard where they were like, yeah, the first 3 episodes are kind of like the pilot. It's a long, extra long pilot before they can really get into the story. At least that's what they claimed anyway. This kind of felt that way to me because this felt like a Star Trek episode. I was engaged with the talking with the Admiral and all of the working in of where Discovery fits in the new Federation and stuff like that. I thought the scene with Saru and Burnham in the Ready Room was nice. That felt like a really classic kind of Star Trek scene. It still has the trappings of Discovery, though. Like, we can't get one episode without some tearful platitudes at the end before everybody goes their separate ways, I guess. But and I'm not sold on the George Al stuff. I don't really know what that scene was about. But aside from that, I just as an episode, a freestanding episode of Star Trek Discovery, I thought it was definitely the best of the season. It's probably one of the better ones, full stop.
Yeah.
Even if it's not the most memorable, and it doesn't have like a big plot going on, or it's not like Best of Both Worlds or anything. It's just a really solidly done episode of Star Trek, I thought.
I thought it was fairly well constructed and fairly well done. The reason that I like the first half is that I like everything that I think that the Admiral character, who's Admiral Vance, is maybe the best, most solid character that the show has ever created, which is strange because he doesn't need a lot. But I think that the combination between the performance and what that character is doing is kind of something that the show needed. And for all the stuff that I liked in the early Federation goings with their interactions with Vance, and I like the fact that those scenes were all built around characters actually telling each other information that the other characters don't really know, so there's a reason to sort of catch them up on it, and the characters have a different perspective about what's going on. What that comes down to is whether or not Vance trusts Discovery at this point. And I thought that there was a nice tension between the story that they were stuck with last season, which is that the Discovery had all record of itself removed and that no one knows about it, which is actually tying into their jump into the future because no one in the future would know about them coming through. So I really like that. The downside of that is, as this is Discovery, it's all reconciled by the end of the episode. There's no continuing this problem that they doubt what Discovery is. But I just like the way that those Admiral scenes felt. I like the way that they interacted with Starfleet. I liked his approach to Starfleet, which is a sort of, he's a buttoned up commander type character, which is not what the show has. And what it really did for me is highlighted, kind of in a bad sense, the Discovery crew seems now to be being played as a crew of misfits, like Lower Decks, interestingly. You know what I mean? Like they no longer fit in with this new order of things. And when they're giving their depositions to the interrogators about where they've been, all of that is played for comedy, but they come across as kind of goofballs who are doing it. And I'm not sure about that. But outside of that, I really liked the Federation stuff. I thought it was going to be kind of awful. I went in expecting it was going to be awful. I'm kind of torn on whether or not I like all of the seeing the new versions of the Voyager ships and the new version of the USS Nog and all that stuff. That seemed fine. They didn't stick to it too long. I liked how grounded and largely unemotional the Starfleet stuff was. It was characters telling each other information and filling in the blanks in a way that felt like they were actually talking to each other, and no one was really crying about anything. I thought that went a long way for me.
Right, and they actually had the hologram doctor scan Michael and ask her if she was prone to emotional over-exaggeration.
Yes.
Yeah, I thought that stuff was yeah, I really liked the Federation stuff. I didn't get a great look at the ships. I didn't see the USS Nog, and I only saw a little bit of the Discovery. I was watching this on my tablet, so I didn't get the best look at everything.
I watched it on the TV. I don't think you get a great look at anything in the first place. Okay. Yeah.
But I do really like the uniforms. I really like the gray uniforms with the colored stripe on the side. That's kind of a cool new version of that look. It has a feel a little bit of Star Trek the Motion Picture, sort of. I thought the Admiral's uniform was really cool with the collar, the red collar and whatnot, and the badges look neat. And that's all I care about. So
It was A-plus for you then, this episode, just based on that stuff.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think all of the Federation stuff except the stuff with George Al, I thought was great. this George Yao stuff, I just thought was like, I don't know. They must have a plan, but I didn't really get anything out of those scenes.
We can talk about that now, I guess, and then we'll swing back to the General Federation stuff. I both like and dislike the George Yao scene, because I like it in that the writers and this scene itself is just a character coming in and going, what the fuck are you doing here, basically?
Yeah.
And I don't really like the way George Yao is still played. And she starts off that scene as kind of her snippy, like, I hate her blinking at the holograms and that shuts them down for some reason.
Yeah, I didn't like that either.
I don't like her tone of things. I don't really like their midichlorian-esque explanation that Terrans have a biological difference to them that makes them evil.
Right. If this ends with evil George Yao getting like an evil lobotomy and turning into good George Yao, I'm going to throw my Roku out the window.
What I really loved about it is that I love this construct of a Terran scientist, like a Terran sociologist, basically. Someone who's been studying Terrans. Sure. And he's the only person who's made George Yao shut up for a second when he, you know, he baits her with the Terran Empire is falling apart. You weren't there. There's no way that you can get back. None of that really feels authentic to me that George Yao was ever trying to get back. She's never really said that. So it feels like they're just kind of pumping her full of motivation at that point. But then I wasn't really crazy that he knew the reason she was staying is because she's close to somebody on Discovery. That felt like too much of a guess for me, where I liked everything else about the scene. But other than that, I liked that they finally wrote a character who could get under George Yao's skin and actually get to her as a character instead of some wiseacre, you know, sidekick show character popping in. And I thought he was really effective at both acting as that character and at least trying to hint towards George Yao having some kind of motivation to be around anymore.
Yeah, you know, when you put it that way, I like it more. I was looking at it more from what was being said about George Yao, and it's like, usually when you do a scene like that, you come away with a new piece of knowledge or understanding about the character who's being interrogated like that when you get the tables turned on them in that way. But everything that he said, while true, was just everything we already know about. He was basically summarizing her character up to that point. It's like, it's the revelation that she cares for somebody on the ship is only a revelation to him, not to the audience or anything.
Right.
So it's kind of an awkwardly structured scene in that way. But you're right. I do like there being a character who can get under her skin and kind of shake her a little bit. I don't know if it shakes her enough to go catatonic in the middle of the hallway, but I don't know what that's
about
either,
very strange. Yeah, that's a strange ending to it. I think that I guess I assume that she feels something for Burnham. Maybe it's been said, or she's had scenes where it's implied that way. I still feel it feels a little bit made up. Like I think George Yao in general just suffers from all of that sequence here. Feels like they're just trying to finally give her something that's going on with her. Like they're trying to impart a lot of knowledge about what she is and what she wants in that scene. And the doctor kind of guesses a lot of it. And I don't know if that's really fair. I like his more scientific study based things. He's like, Terrans never do anything for no reason, blah, blah, blah. I've been studying you. I understand all that. The reason why I like that scene compared to the rest of the Starfleet scenes is that, well, I guess we'll just start with the biggest point here. To me, what this episode really did, and it's nothing new, it just highlighted to me how incoherent of a character Michael Burnham is. Burnham doesn't make any sense to me in this show anymore. Like, so the whole setup of her of this is very, very strange, where she shows up and they meet the Federation. And the Admiral gives them some orders, or the Admiral tells them about something. They tell them about this sickness. And Burnham jumps into it, right? Burnham sort of interrupts him and is like, we can do all this stuff. Like, let us do it, which is fine. That seems to be a Burnham character trait, which is all the way from the pilot, that she's kind of willing to do this. And apparently her time in the future has caused her to become even more like this, I guess. What I don't find believable is that the Admiral and Starfleet here, to me, seem totally rational in how they're handling things. There's there's no sense that what they're doing is like the wrong sort of tact that they should be taking.
Right.
And what happens when you compare it to the Kovic and George Yao scenes is Kovic has 1,000 years of studying where he can turn that against George Yao, right? He knows things because he's lived in this future world with information as possible. Burnham coming back and believing that she and Discovery can do something would be like a general in the Crusades coming into the Afghanistan war and saying, yes, let me tell you how we're going to do things. Everyone would go, yeah, you don't know anything about what you're talking about, so why should I listen to you at all? But the problem here, and then I'll throw it to you, the show believes in Michael Burnham. The show believes that she should know what to do and that she is justified in feeling this way and justified in yelling at the superiors who have 1,000 years worth of knowledge on her. And I mm-hmm. find it really strange. It's almost like they're trying to spin her into a villain, but they don't want to at the end of it. They do everything they can to make her seem out of touch and wrong and making mistakes and being like overly impulsive in what she does, and it never comes back to bite her because she's always right about it.
Yeah. Well, I think you're not wrong, but I think the difference between her and a general from the Crusades is it would be like if a general from the Crusades showed up and the army that he meets up with was landlocked and needed to cross into the next territory over a bunch of mountains, and they couldn't do it. And he's like, well, I have a dragon, so let me fly my dragon over the mountain. You know what I mean? Because they do have an upper hand on the Federation because they have the spore drive.
Yes.
So that's why she is so adamant about it. But I was feeling the same way, where at least Saru is kind of like – more reasonable, where he's like, yeah, we can do this, but maybe we should go through protocol here first.
No, and I think Saru is totally correct, too, in how he goes about it.
Yeah.
And I just don't, I guess more of it comes from the fact that Burnham's like, you can't separate this crew from the ship, when I'm like, well, it kind of makes sense that Starfleet would be like, we need your spore drive, and we'll use it better than you will. They make the argument mm-hmm. that the crew knows the spore drive and can do it better. I just don't, I feel it's too impulsive, and the show rewards her impulsivity towards the end, where the opening scenes with the Federation are confusing to me because it seems like the show is trying to play Vance as a little bit more sinister than he actually is because of his interaction with Burnham. And every time he says something, the camera cuts to Burnham giving a what face? Like she can't believe that this guy is telling her to shut up when he hasn't asked for her opinion in the first place. That's the problem. I understand your dragon analogy. It's like it even further ties into when the crew needs to find the seed ship or whatever. Why? I understand that they're trying to say that the crew of Discovery is more tight-knit than the Federation, and them working together is what causes the solution to come about it. But that would be like a Crusade scientist explaining to COVID scientists now about how to figure out a vaccine for something, right? Like the future people should not be impressed by the science that Discovery is showing them. Does that make sense?
Well,
to
yeah, but again, the science that they're working with is science that the Federation wiped from its records and no one has seen for a thousand
years. No, I'm talking
years.
About saving the seed ship from the ion storm.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. No, in that case, yeah, I think, they have to... they have to make their case for keeping the crew together, and yeah, it's. I do kind of wish that when they showed up and flew into that ion storm and pulled out the ship with a tractor beam, and they're all like kind of knowingly smirking at each other, they cut back to the Federation person who was like, "Yeah, all of our ships can do that. Literally everyone.
Yeah,
arguably better." Well, you got here faster, but after that, nothing is better than what we could do.
Yeah. No, I understand. I understand the thematic point of the crew is now working together, which maybe, remember last week when we were like, maybe they'll do something about the stress levels of the crew and that'll carry on. They're not going to do anything. This is Discovery. They're all better now. It's just I feel that the future Starfleet is overly impressed by what Discovery's doing, when in my sense, they should have the upper hand of everything technological at this point, except for the spore drive, which is the one thing.
Yeah.
But it's just the Discovery crew has to be the greatest crew is the fundamentally the problem here. The Discovery crew can't have a weakness. They are the saviors of this. And so them being together and acting as a unit, even if it's in Burnham's point of view, is to like force herself into the situation. Mm-hmm. It's just a strange thing that seems to fly in the face of why you would want to save the Federation in the first place, because the Federation is this great cohesive unity thing. It's not it's not about the greatness of one ship in the Federation. So it's a little bit at odds, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't bother me that much here, mainly because it's a matter of them proving that they can that they know the ship better than anybody else. I guess the problem is they don't really have anybody to work against. You know, there's no John Henry versus the train here. It's like if they showed up and John Henry, there was no train or the steam hammer or whatever. And John Henry's like, I can bust through this. And it's just him. There's no real
competition.
There's nothing he's really pushing against. They're not proving themselves against a modern crew or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's, yeah, they do come off a little bit smarmy, I guess, in that sense, once they start getting going.
I mean, Burnham, I just thought it really stuck out. I really thought it stuck out that Burnham shouldn't have any idea what she's talking about. And it's not like I was even thinking, like, imagine if a couple of episodes they had run into the seed ship on their way to the Federation, and so they knew the ship was out there. At that point, Burnham would be more justified, in my opinion, because she's like, we know where it is. We can go back and get it. And the Federation shutting her down would be more unreasonable, in my opinion, at that point. But here, she's going on zero evidence. She has zero knowledge about this. And the Federation is 1,000 years more advanced than they are at this point.
Right.
And the only thing they have is the engine to get there. So it just seems strange that when they give the Discovery the chance to go out there, all they do is they send the security officer with them instead of a contingent of modern scientists who would be able to do something. You know, I could almost see a storyline where the Discovery being taken away from them is more upsetting in that way, where this crew from the future Federation starts manning all the stations and doing things, and Discovery feels like it's losing itself somehow.
Sure.
But they don't seem to be doing that. They just send Discovery off by itself to go rescue them, and then they do, and everyone is turned out to be right, which turns us into the second half of the episode. I guess we can start there. Do you have any thoughts about the second half, which is the away mission storyline?
Well, just to kind of wrap up what you were saying there a second ago, yeah, I think the problem is ultimately that they do everything with little hindrance. It's sort of the inverse of Relics, where it's like if Scotty shows up and has no problem whatsoever fitting in and driving and fixing the Class D Model D Enterprise.
Right. He just becomes a new cast member who fits in perfectly. It's like the Thomas Riker. He just takes over Riker's spot and it's the same thing.
Yeah. So that's they're missing that element of them not having any problem with new technology or adapting their ways into the future and stuff. And it seems like they're just choosing not to do that. Like this is a little bit of a tangent, but I think if you want to get into technological talk where people are upset that this is stemming from all the way back from the first season, that the Discovery era tech is way more futuristic than anything that you've seen in any other version of Star Trek. So you kind of lose this sense of timeline. And I think the reason that becomes difficult is, or it becomes an issue, isn't aesthetically, it's that everybody seems to have no problem working all of this future tech. What's the word I'm looking for? The way that Scotty has a problem working the tech on the Enterprise does not exist.
They're not all out of date. They don't need to be caught up on how things work. It looks modern and it functions exactly the same.
Yeah, all of the technology in the 1,000 years in the future more or less looks the same and operates the same as the stuff that that was in the first season of Discovery. So there is no gap. There is no knowledge gap there. And I guess that's just kind of a decision they've made on the show, which is just technology is technology and everybody seems to know how to use it.
Yeah.
It's like flying a ship in Star Wars. Everybody seems to know how to use it. Nobody really questions it.
Well, that's the one. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, it's the one thing there, you know, when they were plotting, when it felt like the Starfleet Admiral was being more sinister, I had thought that the storyline that they were going with was no matter how advanced the tech of the future 32nd century is, they don't have a spore drive. And the spore drive, it's interesting to me that the indifference that Starfleet has towards the spore drive is so profound. They are really they're kind of just like, oh, that's nice, a ship that can go anywhere. You would imagine they would. That's my thing with sending just a security officer. They want Starfleet of this era, it would seem to me, would want desperately to hold on to the Discovery engine.
Right.
Because they can't let this thing get away from them. And at that point, that's where I was expecting more hostility from them. And I would say, justifiable over control of what Discovery is doing. Mm-hmm. And they don't seem to be doing that. I was struck by how the Admiral is just like, you can go anywhere. That's fantastic. Like, why don't you go save this seed ship instead of, like, the first thing they do with Discovery is save three dying aliens or something. They don't go check in with Vulcan. They don't go check in with other places. It's this very small, relatively minor thing, which feels Star Trek-y, but is at odds with how I think the Federation should be reacting to finding a ship that can go faster than impulse speeds at this point.
Right, right, yeah. In a world where light speed travel is more or less non-existent, I guess. I'm not really totally sure what if that's the case. Yeah,
or you very think rare, that, very rare at least. Yeah, because dilithium still seems to exist, but it's very rare, I guess.
Yeah, you would think that the spore drive would be the most coveted thing in the galaxy, but
not the case.
The second half of it, when they go on their mission, I liked it. Again, it felt like a classic kind of Star Trek episode. They even kind of did the thing where the guy's stuck in the transporter, even though they fixed that really quick. I think that's where you get into the more annoying Discovery tropes where
absolutely the science of this is that he's bound by grief is the reason he's out of phase.
Yes, he's bound by grief. You have a scene where Culber and I don't remember the other woman's name, Culber, Nan, and Burnham are standing around and they're just watching Burnham spitball accurate ideas about what's going on. They're not having a conversation. It's just Burnham talking at them, which I was like, okay. Well,
also Nan goes, my people have a special understanding of death. And Culber goes, wow, that's interesting. Michael, you should talk to this guy.
Yes.
Why the fuck does Michael Burnham talk to this guy?
Yeah, well, even at the end when they finally do talk to them, when Nan goes to talk to them and Culber leans over to Michael and is like, you know, she's not really giving him what he needs to hear. you should really do it. I was like, this is another instance where Culber should be the one doing this.
Right.
Like, that scene works 100% better if Michael leans over to Culber and says, yo.
He's a doctor.
Exactly. He's the one who should be going over there and giving him the bedside talk. You know, I don't know why Michael needs to be the person to do that.
No, it's two levels to me. It's Culber not only doesn't suggest himself, he doesn't suggest Nan, who has a cultural relationship to the person who's grieving. He doesn't suggest himself. He's just like random third person in the room. You go talk to him right now.
Yeah.
And it's I don't like the second half of this, mostly because in contrast to what I liked about the dialogue in the Federation scenes, which felt like it was believable and grounded, the problem here is not believable and not grounded. It's built around this guy is too emotional to function anymore, which is just not really very satisfying for me. And it resolves with Burnham talking to him. And then since we have a side character who's got more than five lines of dialogue, that character is now gone from the show as well, because we're going to do that at the same time. So to me, it did feel like the bones of a Star Trek episode, but its execution was 100% Discovery, which really made me, it leaves a sour taste in my mouth at this point, because when it's a Discovery away mission, it's Burnham, Culber, and Nan talking nonsense techno babble that's like emotional techno babble. Mm. And then they have this unsatisfying resolution, and then some character is going to say goodbye, and that's the end of it. And I really didn't like it compared to the first half of the episode.
Yeah. When they got to the end with Nan choosing to stay behind, at first my reaction was very negative, until they kind of, because I thought it was just going to be another person sacrificing themselves and the ship blowing up or whatever. But once I got what was going on, and that she was actually going to finish the mission for her people, and she was going to get to go home and stuff like that, and she's never, hadn't been home in, I don't know, 30 years or whatever.
Yeah.
I didn't mind that as a concept. But again, it's just like, in order to get there, Nan has to give this teary goodbye speech where she talks about how Michael is the greatest person she's ever known.
Yeah.
And, you know, why, you know, again, Michael should be giving that speech to her, not vice versa. You know what I mean?
Right.
Where it's like she's the one sacrificing herself. It should be Burnham who is talking to her, being like, you know, you're making an incredibly brave choice for your family, blah, you know, that kind of thing, instead of her just heaping more praise onto Michael, which is like, I don't know, how much more praise does she need?
I mean, Nan is taking the seed of her past existence as a people and trying to sow it back to her planet, which thematically makes sense with this seed,
right,
ship,
right,
and trying to like sort of, she's becoming a metaphorical version of the Discovery moving into the future and then sowing its seeds everywhere to try, mm-hmm, to like try to spread out the Federation values again or whatever. I'm, mm-hmm, totally fine with that. It's the fact that these, because they do this only to characters who we don't know anything about. The only thing I know about, mm-hmm, Nan is that she can't breathe and she's the security officer. So when,
right,
they, it's the same.
And apparently she had a really close relationship with Arium that I completely forgot about or didn't know, because she keeps citing Arium, and I believe that's the reason she sticks around on the ship last season, right? Because of Arium's death.
Yes, because where does she come from? I remember them.
She comes from Enterprise.
That's right. Correct. Right. Yeah. That's it. Yeah.
But either way, like, so they had. We got to see her interact with Arium for like maybe 15 minutes in one episode, and now she sticks around because of that. And now she's citing Arium and her relationship with her and the sacrifice Arium made as this reason she's going away. And it's just like, we don't know these characters well enough,
right,
for any of this to really stick emotionally. So everybody on screen has to cry.
It's sort of the same way I feel about Georgiou, where they know they're getting rid of her. They're not getting rid of Georgiou, but it felt, in the way that scene felt like they were trying to dump meaning into the Georgiou character before they sacrifice Nan. It feels like they're just trying to give you as much exposition about what Nan is about before she disappears, so that,
right,
you can kind of feel something. And it's,
right,
it's just not effective. They even have semi-effective lines, like I think her race is the Barzans or something. She says, we're a mix of diligence and poverty. It's like, what, that's kind of a interestingly poetic line, but it doesn't mean anything in the context,
right,
of what goes on there. So if they had spent, you know, five or six episodes explaining what that was supposed to mean about this race and why the sacrifice means something to them, I would feel more connected to the material. But as it stands, this is a slightly more functional version of the Arium storyline to me.
Mm. And, you know, I think if you look at the way a show like this would work traditionally, you would have this moment, you would have the story about Nan reconnecting with her people and whatnot, and the story they're telling here affecting her. But ultimately, she continues on the ship, and what happens here becomes part of her character. It's not the end of her character. You know what I mean?
Right.
Where it's like the by the end of the story, she's got some final scene where she sort of reflects, you know, the Enterprise or Deep Space Nine final scene where she reflects on what's happened and kind of gives that sort of solemn off-camera look where you can tell stuff is really landing with her. And then moving forward, that's just part of her character. That's a thing she's gone through that, that helps to grow her as a cast member.
Right.
But on this show and on a lot of modern shows, it's one of the things I hate the most is any character who gets an episode about themselves is dead by the end of it or gone by the end of it. And I don't understand what the point of doing that is other than a cheap pop.
Yeah. Yeah. No, agreed. It's I would say it's mildly more successful than Arium just because I felt like the Arium felt slightly more manipulative to me than this one did. This one felt like it had potential to make a lot of sense. It just didn't have the time to grow into something that made as much sense as I would have liked it to.
I'll be honest. I wasn't expecting her to leave at the end. I when watching the story, that was not something I expected to happen.
Yeah, yeah. And I agree with you that I don't think it's a bad decision. I think it makes sense. It's just the fact that the character is so underdeveloped to that point that it doesn't mean anything. But anyway, after that, Discovery gets back. And that's when everything that I had liked kind of that to that point resets, where the Admiral goes, well, I was wrong. You guys are on the straight and narrow. So I guess that everything will be good and we'll give you Discovery. And then Saru goes, we're bringing the Renaissance back. And I go, oh, Jesus.
Have you ever heard of three-point perspective drawing? Let me draw you a grid.
So that was where, you know, the early goings had me really kind of excited and had great hope. And by the end, I knew that Discovery was just going to revert back to its old ways. And I still like the Admiral character. I still generally like where this episode ends up. I like the way that it all went through. I do think it's one of the stronger Discovery episodes. It's just, to me, the Burnham flaw is almost unforgivable. You would agree that you think the show agrees with Burnham, right? Like the show thinks that Burnham is correct about things?
I guess, because she seems to always be correct about things.
They're not, you don't think they're setting her up for a fall or anything, do you?
If they are, I don't think that they're doing it very well.
Okay.
Because I've yet to see any evidence that she is pushing things too far and like just barely getting by on luck in that case. You know what I mean?
There's right. Luck or coincidence. Things are just falling her way, and occasionally things are not going to, the cards aren't going to fall her way eventually.
Yeah. There's no real pushback. I mean, you know, to kind of go with what you're saying about the end of the episode, you said earlier that they're kind of positioning Discovery now into this sort of more lower decksy area where it's sort of a group of lovable misfits who operate sort of outside the modern understanding of the Federation. It's like Discovery is now Crockett and Tubbs from Miami Vice, right? And at the end of the episode, the chief comes over and says to Crockett and Tubbs, you know, I wasn't sure about you guys at the beginning, but I think we're all on the same page now, looking forward to working with you. And then for the rest of the season, they're just all on the same page and there's no tension there.
Right.
It's like the lovable misfits need to have tension with their superiors. That's where that stuff, that's where that drama comes from. It's not just everybody shaking hands. It's Crockett and Tubbs solve the case, and then Castillo comes in and tells them that you may have gotten this case done, but in order to do that, you ended up getting a good man killed or some shit like that. You know what I mean?
Right.
Where it's like there's this pull and push of tension between these two elements. Whereas here, maybe we're speaking too soon, but it seems like everybody's kind of on the same page now.
Yeah. I have a pretty big philosophical disagreement with Burnham's motivations and actions. If the show thinks that she's right, they're not doing a good job of setting her up as to explain why she's essentially a good detective or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
They're not giving her evidence that she's working off of. It's another argument of this faith thing that Discovery's doing, where Burnham just really kind of believes something, which is again in conflict with her setup as a Vulcan human character.
Sure.
She
setup which again I will say, will never come up ever again.
No, well, they semi-did it here where she's like, when, once they're on the seed ship, Culber says something and Burnham's like, well, if we take this to its logical extreme. But to me, her approaching logic and the seed ship is not at all how she approaches things when she's in the Federation scenes with people. Mm-hmm. And I just don't know what the show is saying where it's kind of saying that it's appropriate for someone in the face of an institution, someone to come in with literally no evidence about anything or any idea what's going on. You're totally disconnected from the situation. But as long as you believe in yourself, you should just push your ideas into these people and be like, listen, I have the right idea. You guys don't know what you're talking about, even though you've all been here and you all know more than me and you have a greater understanding of this world and everything like that. But I believe the right thing to do is go off and do this. And it's not even that Burnham is pushing against a Federation that's unwilling to find that seed ship. You know, they're trying to find it. They're trying to do the right thing. So Burnham isn't just saying, listen, your values are not the way that they should be. You should do my values instead, which are the old time values. She's not pushing against a corrupt Federation. She's pushing against she's basically just yelling at her boss until the boss says, okay, do what you want to do then and we'll handle it later.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough. I don't disagree with that. Yeah. She's just sort of doing the thing she always does now, 1,000 years in the future with little to no repercussions for it.
Yeah.
I was thinking, I'm surprised that they didn't do the thing where instead of just straight up sending Discovery to do this job, that they didn't send a new crew with them. And it's one of those things where like, you can oversee the operation of the spore drive on this one mission, but this new crew is the one that's going to be handling everything.
Right.
And it's one of those things where the new crew can't get the shit done, so the old crew has to come in and you know, stop them from hitting the eject button, basically, that kind of thing.
Right.
So at least there they can prove that they are correct in their assumption or assertions instead of just saying it and then going out and doing it unhindered.
Yeah, it kind of relies on a more compromised Federation than we've been presented with, right?
Yeah.
Like, if the Discovery crew is going to come in and show anything to this new world, which is what I thought the setup for the season was, is that they have direct experience with the old values of the Federation that apparently have deteriorated to this point. But I don't get the sense that that's the case. I don't get the sense that the Federation is no longer an organization that's based around, like, Saru and the Admiral have a conversation about what the values of Starfleet are, and they agree on the values of Starfleet. He says, I hope that you live up to the values of Starfleet. And Saru says, I hope I do too. So they're clearly talking about the same thing. It's just, Burnham isn't pushing, as you said about the John Henry thing, Burnham isn't competing with anybody. She's just trying to raise her hand first so that the teacher calls on her and she gets the answer first. It doesn't feel very satisfying.
Yeah, yeah. And I did catch too, again, I don't think they're doing a super great job of delineating between the Starfleet and the Federation, but there is a scene where Saru just drops a line where he says something about Starfleet and the Federation being two separate bodies that need to come together.
Yes, he does.
And I was like, wait, but they're going to Federation headquarters, right? And everybody here is in Starfleet uniform. So what the fuck is he talking about? Like, I still don't understand this separation they're trying to talk about, but they're not really explaining. Because obviously, the Federation and Starfleet are two different things, like on paper, as far as, you know, paperwork goes. But as far as I've been a part of Star Trek, it seems like they're more or less interchangeable.
I think what Saru is saying is that it's Starfleet's job, and Starfleet is everyone that's in this bubble at the start, to go out and collect the Federation worlds again. So the Federation is splintered because they can't talk to each other and they can't reach each other. And Starfleet, at least in Saru's idea, is supposed to go out and sort of reunite everybody, and that's their job or whatever. But before we go to the final thoughts, what'd you think about Starfleet headquarters? I always find it funny, and it's a traditional Star Trek trope, where they fly up on it and it's clearly like a holographic bubble is on the screen, and they're hidden inside that, and it never works like a cloak where you just can't see it. It's always like something visible is right there and you're looking at it. It's just you have to go inside it to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, it's the Predator special effect where there's, it's not, you can see through it, but if you really look at it, it's kind of shimmering. And I thought it was kind of cool. It was a lot different than what I was expecting. I was expecting they go in through the bubble and it's basically this utopian, perfect looking society like Earth was.
Right.
Further not really getting to the point of the idea that this stuff is not going well or that there is some sort of strain here.
Yeah.
I thought the idea was cool. I actually really enjoyed them nerding out over the future tech stuff, like talking about the ships with the detached nacelles, and one ship was entirely made up of force field or something.
Yes, yeah. One ship has like a forest on it. It's just a spaceship forest or something. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that stuff was cool. I doubt how much of that we're going to see again. Usually the way these shows work, I'm sure in the last 5 minutes of the final episode, Voyager's going to show up and save them or something. But I thought that stuff was neat. I would like to see more of it. I would honestly, based on this episode, I would like to spend more time with the Federation.
Yeah, but and the trailer for next episode looks fucking terrible, if I can say that. Based on a trailer, that looks really bad to me.
I was coming out of this one, I was kind of excited that they've sort of reset themselves a little bit.
And Book is arrested and they got to bust him out of jail.
Yeah, and Michael has to steal a transport ship to fly to Rock Planet or to bust him out and probably be the Che Guevara to some rock people revolution or something.
Right, yeah.
Prison. I don't know. But before we go, we do have to talk about the one element that I couldn't have rolled my eyes harder at. It's... You know, they have the burn. The burn is the thing already going on, but there hasn't been the unifying spiritual mystery element to it yet. But we got it this week with this mysterious like lullaby. Everybody seems to know.
Yes, and Burnham asks if someone thinks it's unusual, and they go, "No, that's just everyone knows that song. There's nothing weird about that whatsoever."
Yeah, clearly that's going to be the unifying element that brings them to whatever the answer to the burn is for some stupid reason. But it's like, they can't resist, can they? It's not going to be a scientific thing. It's going to be some
Burnham's
sort of
mother saying that as a lullaby to her before the crystal exploded. It's like it's the exact resonance frequency needed to shatter dilithium, and someone sang it into a microphone or something. You know, it's like
It's the song Manowar sang when they were trying to get the Guinness Book World Records for a highest pitch scream when they ended up blowing up all the dilithium in the galaxy by accident.
The only positive I have to say about that is that I have no idea where that can go or how that can be tied into anything. Yeah, but it is going to be bad. I know it's going to be bad when they figure out how they want to tie it into it, but it is strange. It's a strange, mystical, weird thing that's almost as weird as George Yao just standing frozen in the very end scene, and Burnham not particularly shaken by that sequence of events where she's a mannequin and then not a mannequin anymore. So who knows?
We'll see.
One positive, there was one small interaction that I really enjoyed. I just wanted to bring it up, mostly because I like the Admiral Vance character. When Vance is talking to Adira Tall, he knew Senna Tall, and they have a nice semi-low-key conversation where he obviously recognizes Tall. He knows that it's a trill. And so, but he has a great closing line, which I think does well for the character to expose what Vance is all about, where he says, "I was familiar with him. I'm not familiar with you." And
yes,
recognize that. And I was just like, that's a great Starfleet Admiral line, if I've ever heard one right there.
Yeah, I really like that line. It was sort of the inverse of the first meeting of Sisko and Dax.
And Dax, right.
Where he's like, "Oh, you're a woman now. Fantastic. We're best friends again." In this case, it was the Admiral version where he's like, "I knew the last guy. I don't know who you are.
Right.
So step back."
Yeah. I liked it. I like the Admiral character. I think he's really good. I think he's effective.
I do too. It's tough because with this show, every time they introduce an element that I like, I just kind of hold my breath to see how they're going to ruin it.
Right.
And I'm really hoping that this sort of new Federation structure that they're adding doesn't just end up being a house of cards that crumbles as soon as they keep going in the season, because it's too bad. I like the Admiral character. I like the Federation stuff as it stands. I'd be curious. I'm interested to see where it goes, but I'm not super hopeful, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah. That's it. I guess we're done with this one. Thank you very much for listening, guys. This was Die Trying. You can support the show at patreon.com/thepenskyfile if you're so inclined. A couple dollars a month gets you extra stuff like podcasts and the commentary tracks and all that good stuff. And as always, a special thank you to our Captain Tier patrons, Christian Pouch, Tark Latif, Chris Tinsley, Mike Burnett, Sean, Cardinal Doomsday, Joint Mango, Matt Cutler, Ben Douglas, Kyle Barrett, Samuel Custer, Nick Sergey, Bradley Killens, Matt Ross, Rune Venler, Nathan Elliott, Eric Johnson, Andrew Chilog, Grim Santo, Poindexter G, Dwayne Hackett, Paul Orozco, Jordan Cooper, Derek Zajac, Kevin Reyes, Vault 13 Hero, Stefan Minton, Nick the Rat, Darth Mosk, HH28, Matt Gary 6, Jacob123, Mike Karras, Jakey's Gamer, Patrick Seba, Captain Brazen, Kevin Lowry, Eric Santuan, Corey Martin, William Scheisler, Zane Majors, Soylent Blue, and Groppler John. Thank you very much for supporting the show. I guess that's it. We'll be back with the next episode, which I think has a title. Scavengers, I guess, is what it's called. But it did not look like a good trailer to me, unfortunately. But I would agree with you, Clay, that I liked this episode. I thought it was maybe the best Discovery episode in a long time. But it still, unfortunately, has Discovery traits to it. But I was not... This was the first episode this season I was not sort of like sighing or like oh god, like there was not a single oh god moment throughout this one. There was just minor moments where it was like, I wish they hadn't done that, but nothing that really took me out of it.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's you know, it's interesting, this show has kind of entered Enterprise territory for me, where it's the ones that are just capable or slightly above average end up standing out as being like the best thing they've done in two seasons.
Yeah
Which is too bad, but it's, you know, I think that an episode like this honestly should be the baseline. I'm not necessarily like action or whatever or what actually happens, but just like it's a well put together episode that should be the baseline for a show like this, but is unfortunately not.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. Do you have anything you want to plug before we go?
We just had a new Rotten Horror Picture Show come out this week. We covered Wreck, the Spanish quote-unquote zombie movie, if you want to call it that. And next week we've got Badass is coming back. I can't remember exactly the episodes. I tried to look it up, but it didn't load in time. but we're getting close to the end of the season. And after that, Sean and I will be doing the Sub-Zero Batman versus Mr. Freeze movie and then jumping into season 4.
Cool. Guys, thank you very much for listening. Support the show at patreon.com/thepenskyfile if you're so inclined. Let us know what you thought about Die Trying. It's the latest episode of Star Trek Discovery. We'll continue with Enterprise and Discovery alternating weekly going forward. Thanks very much for listening. We'll see you next time.